Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 7, Season 9. We're getting near the end of another season. Can you believe it? I hope you've been spreading the love and sharing the love and letting people know all about us. Downloads are saying that you are. Thank you all so much for that. Normal, as ever, top of the show, I always say on my left, hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And on my right, I say hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Jack and Tony.
That was mighty friendly of you, considering some of the things you were saying to us before we started recording. So
saying very, very polite things, having caught up with both of you very recently. You know, it's an unusual position to be in.
I still believe that if we're all in the same place at the same time, the world will implode.
Well, and do you know what's interesting? I've just received an email from Jack Bennion, Tony Simpson. Have you received one recently from him?
Do I need to check my emails? Do I need to see whether I've had something from Jack Bennion? Let's see. This could be exciting.
Listeners, Absolute Rally don't want to know if you've got an email from me. They want to know about rallying.
No. Well, they've come to the wrong place, haven't they? Because we talk about passion, of course. I've had an email from Jack Bennion. There you go. Happy days. Right, folks. It's that time again where a bit later on, we're going to be talking a few bits and pieces with Martin Holmes, actually. So I'm going to try and steer away from what we covered with Martin. But Jack, I'm going to come to a piece again with regards to Citroën, which I feel like we're covering old ground always. But Citroën just does seem to be this continuously talking point. They're pushing on for their upgrades for a C3. And they're saying that lessons have been learned and things like this. But there's still no decision, well, today, with regards to who's going to be driving the cars on Spain.
No, you're right there. There's still no decision. But I'm fairly sure I read something last week that said the decision wouldn't come till the start of September. So I think we're still waiting for that one. But I think that was just to do with Meek and not the other drivers for next year. So maybe there's a different announcement coming for Spain. But yeah, David Evans has done a bit of a rundown with Yves Matton, talking about the Citroën development and the fact that they're willing to take bigger risks than ever before to fix their C3, which I should hope they are, because they haven't got much to lose, have they, at the moment?
Well, there's three events left to go, isn't there, right? And, you know, obviously they want to try and data capture as much as possible now. And you just feel that now this is, well, I think they already said that they were already getting for 2018, three or four events ago now. And ironically, we've had Andreas Mikkelsen finish second on Germany since then. But you've just got to really wonder what's going to happen now, because they've got to come back. There's got to be a shake-up. I know we talked about this and how the structure of Citroën Racing is these days compared to perhaps some of the other teams, but there's just, you know, they've got to do something in 2018. Now, surely, Citroën cannot afford another failure, and the management there can't afford to have another repeat of this season.
No, we talked about the corporate structure last week, didn't we? And I'm sure everybody in that team is under pressure to perform. You know, they've got to promote the brand. But interesting that, you know, they're going to push for upgrades. They're going to take risks to push the development of the car. But, you know, it's funny because the areas that the car seems to be lacking are fundamental areas. They're not areas where they haven't pushed the boundaries. It's areas where they haven't covered the basics. You know, like so suspension, for example. You know, as we've talked about, they've been developing or building their own suspension, whereas everybody else goes to a proper standalone company that specialises in suspension, and they buy it in. And they've been having problems with fundamental things, not necessarily pushing the boundaries, because as we know, the car's been quick when it works. So, you know, interesting that they should say they're going to take risks, if you like, with the development. But no, they at the end of the day, they have to have a competitive car next year. We all expected it this year.
Can I pose a question, one more question to you, Ryan Champion? Has the fan kicked in on your laptop?
It did, yes.
Yeah. Just checking. Jack, what do we do with them? What do we do with them? We start and we have a nice moment where we're all interacting, and then his old laptop, the tight Yorkshireman, won't fix his laptop.
It is fixed. It just gets hot sometimes.
Anyway, Jack, the other thing that Yves Matton made reference to, we talk about this a bit later on the podcast, Martin Holmes and I, is with regard to the value of new WRC rounds. You know, Turkey, I think, has been formally announced now as the replacement for Poland, doesn't it?
Sorry, say that again, Tony. You just broke up a little bit there.
Sorry, I was just saying that Turkey now has been announced pretty much as the replacement for Poland, or am I misquoting that?
No, it's to be ratified at the calendar, the Sporting Council meeting next month, but we're fairly sure Turkey's been added.
Now, obviously, one thing that was mentioned, as I say a bit later on the podcast, is that, you know, events coming in, the bars are so high of the quality events that we've got in there. We need to be sure that any event that's coming in now surely is at least as good as what we've already got. Otherwise, we're back in the realms of what we've had with Poland.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always that trade-off, isn't it, between the sort of commercial and manufacturer interest in the events that we're going to, and the sporting aspect of whether the event will satisfy the spectators and the drivers. You're always going to have that trade-off in sort of, especially in rallying, but in all of motorsport, really. So it's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top of that little battle. But I think it's interesting to hear Yves sort of siding with the sporting aspect, when I'm fairly sure Citroën would have been one of the teams pushing quite hard for China to be involved last year. I think it's interesting that, you know, all the teams have their own agendas and they all want to see different events in for their own benefit, don't they? So I think it's always worth remembering that, you know, the teams do have their own agendas and they want to push them in the way that's best for them.
Right, is this the problem that, you know, obviously you would think that M Sport have their own agenda, Citroën will have their own agenda, and, you know, is this where perhaps a world championship with more than, you know, the two manufacturers we had at one point, is, you know, we've got perhaps different teams wanting different things, pulling in slightly different directions.
Yeah, and that's always going to happen, isn't it? The more teams you put into a championship, then they all have their own reasons for being there, don't they? And their own aims that they're trying to achieve. And as we've seen in Formula One over the years, you know, when you leave the decision to the teams, then nothing happens. And that's why, obviously, as we know, Bernie Eccleston did so well as a dictator, because the teams could never agree. And the more teams that we have in World Rallying, the better the strength in depth for the competition. But you're right, you know, helping in making decisions like where we should go in terms of the calendar. And the other thing is, not only have they all got different aims, but they've all got very different budgets, and different people to answer to with those budgets.
Do you think perhaps, you know, the needs to be more direct leadership then, right, from you know, the promoter itself?
I think we'd all like to see that, wouldn't we? You know, we've all talked about new, you know, when there was a change of promoter, when we initially thought Red Bull were going to get involved, and then we've seen some Red Bull involvement, and, you know, we thought we were going to see some revolution rather than evolution, and that hasn't happened, and some of the revolution didn't sit very well with traditionalists, including myself. But we've not seen very much happen at all, have we? New regulations have come, but that's come from the FIA. You know, what have we really seen from the promoter? What's changed? There's nothing radical. And we're seeing an improvement in the championship, but that's because we've got more manufacturers there. We're seeing better coverage because Red Bull have got involved. But yeah, I think you're right. We could do with a bit more direction.
There you go, guys. I want to push on to again the prize drive, or it's not really a prize drive, is it? This kind of shootout thing, Jack, that's been going on. We've lost two Brits from round one. Have you got anything you can add to that? I've got no idea. Jack, have you suddenly removed yourself from being anywhere close to a microphone?
No, I'm still here. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you now, but it sounded perfect. Like you just walked away from the microphone and were shouting from the other side of the room. No, it's fine. It's fine.
That's okay. Yeah, Tom Cave and Chris Ingram are the two drivers who didn't make it through, and Gus Greensmith is the driver who did make it through. So we've got Gus as sort of representing the Brits in the next round, which I believe will involve driving an R5 car on gravel and asphalt, and he'll go up against some drivers. There's a lot of surprises in there, I'll be honest, but Cali Rovanperä obviously being one of them. Carl Kruger, I think, is probably one who will surprise a lot of people being involved in there, but he's been doing well out in China, so good to see him involved. Emil Bergqvist, quite well known to people who followed the European Junior Rally Championship. He was champion in 2015. And then we've got Gus Greensmith's teammate, Pierre-Louis Loubet from WRC2's in there. Yari Huttunen, who we saw win WRC2 in Finland last month. And René Mandel, who's second in the German Rally Championship. So interesting group of drivers, that one.
Pep Lopez as well, who's been driving the 208 T16.
You know what, he's one of my most highly rated young drivers in Europe, that lad. I think he's absolutely brilliant. And if he wasn't driving a 208 T16 R5, then I think he'd be on a lot more people's lips at this point of the year.
Well, were we surprised that perhaps Tom certainly went out at this stage because obviously he's been driving the R5. He had a great result on Finland. I think many people thought he was pretty much a shoo-in it at one point.
Yeah, it's. I don't really know how to explain the Cropper drivers. Obviously, we weren't on the interview panel, so we don't know exactly, you know, how the drivers have presented themselves and things like that. But certainly, there's a couple of drivers in there who I would say are sort of inferior to Tom in my opinion. But you know, what do I know? Hyundai know a lot more than me, I'm sure.
Right, you've gone through these processes, and you know they're not always as black and white as perhaps what we see on the outside. But you know that. Cropper drivers, as I say, you know, obviously Chris has been doing ERC in a two-wheel drive car. Perhaps that was maybe a little bit of his undoing, but you know, Tom's certainly gone very, very well in the R5 Hyundai, and you know, when things have been going well for it, he's put in very, very competitive stage times.
Yeah, like you said, you it's difficult to say from the outside, isn't it? It's difficult to see exactly, you know, the process and what they're looking for. And as you quite rightly said, these things aren't always black and white. There is sometimes things going on that you don't see on the outside. But nonetheless, you know, Tom Cave has been a Hyundai runner. You would assume that come to an assessment in an R5 i20, you would go very, very well. Yeah, surprising really to see him get dropped. Chris, obviously from a British point of view, we would love to have seen him get through. Whether it was the fact that he didn't have the R5 experience, I guess that's possible, looking at the drivers he's up against. But yeah, Tom is quite a surprise.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Now, I guess, you know, we look at the drivers who are left and you know, the one that screams out as well, Jack, is Cali Rovanperä. Still 16 years old, you know, there's been plenty said about him perhaps being in an M Sport car next year, but you can't help but feel that if this is a serious proposition for him to drive, you know, a Hyundai supported R5 car, that's where he's going to be.
I disagree.
Okay. Go on. No, this is good.
I don't think anything has changed. Even though the Cali has been included in that process, I still think we'll see him in an M Sport car towards the end of the year.
I don't think that's probably under dispute, but I think what possibly could be under dispute is what happens next, really. You know, if he's got an opportunity to drive the Hyundai next year, then, you know, fully funded, then, you know, his managements are not going to have to go and find budgets, are they?
I still think we'll see him in an M Sport car next year, Tony. That's all I can say. It's my opinion that we will see him in an M Sport car next year. I don't know if it's true, but I'm sure we will.
Right, you think Jack's trying to tell us something, but not tell us something?
Well, it sounds that way, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? It does. Right, as I say, I think you did some of these shootouts, didn't you? When you were a lot hairier on the head and probably not quite as grey down below. Just perhaps for our listeners, just tell us maybe what you went through when you went through a shootout process.
They were always quite a nervy affair because, you know, you've always been assessed. And again, it was when you were, you know, quite early on in your career. So, you know, maybe teens or 20, 21, whatever. And the assessment usually involved experienced drivers, be it, you know, I remember sitting on the Shell scholarship when Jim McRae and Gwyndaf Evans were assessing. And then there was a Ford Finder driver of the future where Malcolm Wilson sat on the panel. And so you were going into and Michel Mouton as well, actually, if I remember rightly. So you were going into an environment where you've got serious people assessing you. And at that time, I didn't have the experience that a lot of the young guys have got now. You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The rallying's changed completely now, where drivers at 20, 21 years old have done several rounds of the World Championship, if not 2 years in the World Championship by then. You know, that was never the case when I was sort of going through these assessment programs. But yeah, you went into them. There was normally some sort of media assessment, so you'd have the likes of a Jack Benny in there. to interview you, to ask you from a, you know, a journalistic point of view, to see how he responded to questioning. You'd have maybe a technical assessment to see what level of engineering you had, as well as a driving assessment. So these programs are normally, you know, quite well rounded. It seems obviously Hyundai are doing this in rounds. So there's been the sort of personal assessment before the driving assessment, it would seem, with their setup. But yeah, quite interesting. And they obviously normally these programs have had a, you know, had a good prize at the end of them. So it's great to see Hyundai doing this, and it'd be nice to see, you know, more of these programs available on offer, if you like.
There you go, Jack Bengen posing questions to people. Jack, can I ask you a question?
I'm very worried about how funny you found that I'm a journalist and I have questions.
No, do you know what, to tell you what made me giggle, right?
Go on.
Clearly you didn't listen to last week's programme.
Right. Why?
Because I had Rich Milner on and I posed a question from Ryan that he asked me to ask.
And I did think Jack Benny's question was very funny.
I've not listened back to the,
as much as I'd like to say Ant and Dec are superheroes, I don't reckon they are.
No, but, neither do I.
It was a good answer anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There you go, Jack.
It did make me giggle before then Zav upset me by then, you know, making his insulting comments. But, you know, I'll not retaliate now, because that would be childish.
It would be very childish. Well spotted. So, yeah, Jack Bengen, I posed a question to Rich that Ryan had carefully crafted, if you remember. And then I posed a question on your behalf too.
Good. I look forward to listening to that back.
Do you think we should tell him, Ryan, or should we just...
No, I'm going to listen to it.
Okay, fine. There you go.
But it does involve Ant and Dec.
It does involve Ant and Dec. It does. It does. So I'll leave you to think about that one.
Is this where I make a PJ I'm Blind reference, or should we just leave?
No. Okay. Leave it there, Jack Bengen. Right, now, it's not very often we get to this point, Jack, where you write your piece every week, and you're the group national editor, of course, of MN. And I found your piece this week, that sounds really wrong, really interesting. And it's with regards to homologation. And it's something which I suppose is often bandied about and often talked about. Is this homologated? Is it not homologated? And one thing that does seem to be happening as time goes by is that less and less smaller cars seem to be getting homologated. And obviously we've now had, you know, the AP4 cars, the AP4 plus things happening, things like that. Seems to be quite a lot going on Twitter as well quite recently. I think even Ryan was been speaking to Brendo after his amazing result. By the way, Brendo, well done last weekend on your result in the Mazda AP4 car. You've shared some thoughts with regards to homologation, Jack. Perhaps you should tell our listeners a little bit about what your thoughts are about homologation.
Okay. I guess there's kind of two key elements to the piece that I've written. I guess the first would be that I think the R5 is too expensive in its current format. I think the car is sort of, the minimum price is £180,000 roughly, but by the time you've actually got the car in an acceptable spec to rally it in, you're looking at over 200 grand because you almost certainly you're going to have to buy a gravel kit, a tarmac kit, or both for depending on which manufacturer you buy a car from. And then roughly to do a year of the BRC, I reckon you're looking at between £200,000 and £300,000 to do it in an R5 car at a decent level, which is comparable to, you know, the only thing you compare to really is circuit racing championship, isn't it? So if you look at the British Touring Car Championship, for example, that price is kind of comparable. But what the British Rally Championship doesn't have is an all-day ITV4 TV package on a Sunday. It doesn't have a lot of the commercial sponsors that the BTCC has. It doesn't have the facilities and the number of spectators that the BTCC has, and the list goes on. So for me, I think the R5 is a brilliant format. Don't get me wrong, this is not a criticism of the R5 format, because it's proved very successful. It's been brilliant all around Europe, and it's great that you can, you know, people like Josh Moffat can rally his car in Ireland every week and then take it away to do the ERC or anything like that he wants to do. So for the format in the way it is, works. But for me, it's just a little bit too expensive. And then the second part of the column looks a little bit more at sort of how the cars are actually homologated. So we've seen in recent times things like the Mitsubishi Mirage come through, R5 car that did have quite a few teething problems, as you would expect for a car being developed by a private manufacturer. but couldn't get it homologated because Mitsubishi wouldn't back the homologation process. And for anyone who doesn't understand how the FIA homologation process works, a manufacturer like Ford or Toyota or whoever have to give their permission for a car to be homologated in the name of that manufacturer, and then they pay a princely sum to the FIA to have that car homologated, and then they can sell the car. So I think it's time for a look at how cars are homologated. So obviously, Mellors Elliott are building the Proton at the minute, the Iris R5 with the backing of Proton. If they didn't have that backing of Proton, they wouldn't be able to build the R5 car, and that, you know, Mellors Elliott wouldn't be, you know, A, wouldn't have the work that they've got now, and B, wouldn't be able to sell R5 cars to multiple people. So I think if they opened it up, we would get more cars. It would be easier to bring the price down because you'd have more competition, and because a lot of the R5 cars are spec parts, obviously that, you know, having more manufacturers there is going to open everything up a little bit more. And I think some of the private manufacturers can do things a lot cheaper than what it costs, for example, for M Sport or Skoda to do a rebuild. I think the whole cost system could come down quite a bit, and that could make the sort of R5 formula a lot more sustainable than it currently is, because I think we're not in trouble yet because we're getting more and more R5 cars on events all over the world, aren't we? But I think we're going to hit a point where it's going to get too expensive for people to do year on year.
Before I jump in, Ryan Champion, your thoughts?
Well, I think Jack Bennion actually read my notes for my Any Other Business this week before he wrote his column.
Okay.
Did you not see that I was doing that while we were eating dinner the other night?
Well, I guess that's probably where some of my thoughts came from as well, because obviously Jack and I had dinner the other night and we did discuss this and discussed around this, and I absolutely agree. And going into my Any Other Business, it ties into this exactly, you know, two other thoughts on that. Jack and I talked about the TCR series in circuit racing now. And TCR, for those people not into circuit racing, was it started off as a regional touring car championship, but now these regional championships are popping up in different countries. We're going to see a UK-based TCR championship next year. And effectively, the homologation in some... Each car is homologated by one team, and in some situations these teams are manufactured batch. For example, Hyundai Motorsport have a TCR car, but in other areas then these cars have been developed privately by a private team. And I think, why not do that with R5? So you can open it up. If there isn't, for argument's sake, you know, we see an announcement about Alfa Romeo coming back into the BTCC. Well, for example, if there isn't an Alfa Romeo R5 car and Alfa don't want to homologate one, why not let a private team build one? And as long as they're built to, you know, the homologated spec, if you like, the more teams you've got building them, the more it's got to bring the price down. As Jack said, a lot of the parts are common parts. But I'll go a step further, and this ties into exactly what you were saying earlier, Tony, just about the brief conversation that I had with Brendan on Twitter. Why do we need R4? Or rather, R4 great, but why isn't R4 R5 light? So we know how costly R5 cars are. We know that they can be very quick cars. So why don't we have a more basic form of an R5 car as R4 that can then be up-spec'd to R5? But this, for me, would have to tie into being able to have more people homologating the cars, because if it was just the Hyundais and the M Sports of this world, then it would still be costly. But I think, exactly as Brendan said, R4 light could be brilliant, because the actual body shells of an R5 car, I think a replacement body shell from M Sport is about £20,000. Well, actually, if you set on to buy, for argument's sake, an Evo 10 body shell and put a roll cage in it, you would easily get to that kind of money. So the body shells aren't expensive. The dampers aren't that expensive. But then when you get to engine and transmission, it does get expensive. So for me, there's definitely a case for R4 being R5 light, where you can update it at a later spec. You know, we talked earlier in the year about an R2 light to come in below the full R2 cars, and I think there's definitely a gap there, and I wholeheartedly agree with Jack that independent homologation should be possible.
There you go. Well, I was kind of listening. You've actually pinched a little bit of my Any Other Business, by the way, which I'll come to in a second. But this is where perhaps this R4 thing, and we're covering old ground because we have talked about this before. The Orica kit, which is now being developed, and we've seen some images of that car already. Surely that's what that was meant to be doing. That was meant to be R5 Lite, but obviously, given it its proper, you know, its proper name, it is R4. But as we've discussed, you know, by the time you get to a completed R4 car, you're well in the realms of an R5 car, and that's where it falls over.
Yeah, and there's no common ground between an R4 car and an R5 car, I don't think. Whereas there is, surely there's the scope to do that. You could have quite easily have, you know, a more standard engine, maybe a lesser spec transmission, whatever it might be, to bring the costs of R5 down and have it as an R4 class. But I do think, like Jack said, one of the key things is having some form of independent homologation. It seems to be working very well in TCR. Jack, how many cars, roughly speaking, would be homologated in TCR now?
Oh, I think we've got at least 8 manufacturer-backed cars, and I think there's actually more than that. It's quite some of them are quite difficult because they're sort of nationally homologated, so they wouldn't be allowed to compete in the TCR International Championship, but they are allowed to compete in National Championship. So there's a few lines to be drawn with TCR, but yeah, I think there's at least 8 manufacturer-backed cars in the TCR Championship, which is great. I think can I add one more thing, Tony, just before
we do it? Of course you can. Yeah, yeah.
The other thing to this, I think, is very, very important to mention, and unfortunately I didn't have enough room to sort of slot this into my column, but what we've seen this year is the FIA opening up the rules to allow non-homologated cars to compete on international events. So when we get to Rally GB at the end of the year, you'll see Mark II Escorts and Subaru Imprezas and stuff like that aren't homologated anymore competing in the international event. So those cars are allowed to compete alongside the current homologated cars, and although they won't be able to score points in lots of different championships and stuff because they won't meet the regulations, what is the reason now for needing a manufacturer to back a car to be homologated? Because we're the FIA are now allowing cars that aren't homologated into international events so for all intents and purposes I can go out and buy a Nissan Micra and do the 3-day Rally GB and do the whole international event, the same one that Sebastian Ogier is doing, and do the recce, and there's no difference. So what is the need for a manufacturer to back one? Because as long as they're meeting the homologation and the safety aspect of the build of the car, then surely there's no reason for it to be involved anyway.
But while that's great, talk about complicating the sport again.
Yeah,
you know, like we keep saying keep things simple, and now you can run an unhomologated, never homologated potentially car on an international rally. Then it's just muddied the water again. You know, if we had a simpler process in the first place, then we wouldn't be in this mess.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, my any other business links into all this. Does yours, Jack Bengen?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to do mine. Okay, and the reason why I'm going to do mine is because one was the fact that Ryan's already mentioned it. It's the Alfa Romeo, which is on the front page, which is okay. It's touring cars. I never thought I'd bring myself to be talking about circuit racing-y stuff, but it's touring cars. But it did remind me of when, funnily enough, a private team, Steve Hill Motorsport, tried to develop a 147 under the guise of a Super 1600. I'm sure Ryan remembers this.
Yeah, I do. I used to run against Steve Hill when I was driving the Puma, yeah.
Steve's somebody who I work with quite closely because he ended up going to British Rallycross, but Steve and I go back a long way. And but this reminded me, when I seen the Alfa and then I seen some of the pictures of the Alfas that Jack's papers put out today, and then it got me thinking about Alfa in motorsport in general. And then I thought about the 147. Now, the 147 started the season and it had an unofficial, I seem to remember, national homologation, and Steve Hill spent an absolute fortune. I know he spent a fortune trying to get a pair of cars out there, and then something happened and for the life of me, I can't remember what it was, and maybe Ryan might be able to fill in the blanks, but basically they didn't finish the season because there was some dispute over the inverted commas national homologation process.
I can't remember it clearly, but I think you're right. I think the idea was there was going to be a national homologation, and then that was rescinded or something along those lines. Yeah, I can't remember exactly.
And basically, Steve ended up with some very, very expensive ornaments, and I think they ended up doing hill climb stuff and things like that in the end, which was a great shame. And, you know, his ethos was exactly what you guys were describing. And this is going back, right? This would have been, what, 2003?
It was 2003, yeah.
Yeah, so this would have been 2003 when somebody tried to take a manufacturer and try to do what we're discussing here in the British Rally Championship, and it's just somewhat ironic 14 years later, it's now being discussed quite openly as a possible solution, which I just think is somewhat ironic, really. But that's my only business anyway. Search it out. They were a unique-looking thing, it has to be said, and they also sounded very, very nice, but still, there you go. Search it out, folks. You'll find it on YouTube. Jack Bengen, any other business?
I watched with interest the Baron Rally over the weekend, and Marianne Griebel was the first crowned ERC champion of the year, I believe, and he won the under 28 category, which has entitled him to a drive in a WRC car on a World Rally Championship event. So as a prize that big, I thought that was worth pointing out. And I've got one more any other business.
I apologise because we didn't really mention Barham. I thought you were going to be honest with you. We've got to tip our hats.
Do a bit of Barham if you like.
Well, we've got to tip our hats to Jan Kopecky, who wins again. I think that's pretty much his event, isn't it, Barham?
Yeah, but I think we also need to tip our hats to Alexey Lukyanuk, who once again, despite having all sorts of broken bones and wounds and not being able to stand up straight, and on the second day he had to have his co-driver driving on the road sections because he was feeling a bit weak, and he's, you know, at the end of the first day he was still well within Kopecky, and you know, he really kept him honest on the first day, which for anyone to keep Kopecky honest at Barham, you know, is a massive achievement. And you know, he finished 55 seconds down over the 3-day rally in the end, which I just think is absolutely staggering. Do you know, it's hard to realise when something's happening in the current world that you're going to think back on it in 20 or 30 years time and think that was amazing. But I know for a fact that in 20 or 30 years time I'll look back on Alexey Lukyanuk's last two performances in the European Rally Championship and remember them for how brilliant they really were.
Big call to make there, Jack Benyon, and I couldn't agree more. Right, I tell you who did kind of prick my interest a little bit in Barham was the man who was third. I don't know whether you've seen the results from Barham, but it was Roman Cresta.
And a name from the British Championship in the past, obviously, he was part of the M Sport World Rally team, wasn't he? In the Focus, and then drove for the Stobart team in the British Championship in another short-lived Super 1600 car, the Fiesta.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you want an interesting story to do with Roman Cresta now, Tony?
Go on, go.
Came out of retirement over the summer and has been doing a few check rounds this year, but mainly to beat his brother-in-law, Thomas Koska, who finished fourth, also in a Skoda Fabia R5. And the gap between them was something like 2 or 3 seconds.
So, 3 seconds it was.
Yeah, there you go. So that's his brother-in-law, Thomas Koska, that came out of retirement to try and beat.
Let's just get our heads around this fact. He's come out to beat his brother-in-law and he's running an R5 Skoda. There must be some budget there. That's the only thing I can say. Either that or there's potentially some proper family issues there. Maybe something for Jeremy Kyle to look into. I'm not entirely sure. But no, fair play. Thank you for your interest in any other business, Jack Benyon. Thank you.
I've got more. I wasn't going to do anything on Barham, but then you said we've not got anything on Barham, so I thought I'd better fill.
Go on.
You know,
go on. You knock yourself out.
I know this is your train set, but I'm going to change. I'm going to change the signal this week and demand that we get a guest on the show in 2 weeks' time or within the next 2 weeks.
Go on.
And it's not Alex Kelsey. I've already demanded in private that you get on.
I know.
It is David Bogie, because I'm very excited about this story. He's converting his Millington Escort into gravel spec and is going to drive it on the next round of the Scottish Rally Championship. And he's also going to do an event here in the UK, which I think our listeners will be very interested to learn a bit more about, the McRae Gravel Challenge, which happens a week after the anniversary of Colin McRae's death and runs through one of his favourite forests, the Craig Vinian Forest. And it's being run by Colton's Car Club, who Colin was a member of. And they're running two stages. They're going to run through the two stages twice, so there'll be four stages in total. Two really nice spectator areas. And David's one of the first sort of big names to sign up for this event. So I'm really hoping that we get some big names signed up for that event. And it's a good send-off for Colin. And we'll, you know, hopefully that will be the case. But also, the Galloway Hills Rally, which happens next Saturday, is going to be David's sort of gravel debut in a Millington Escort. And I can't wait to see how sideways that thing gets. Should be brilliant.
Set it up, Jack Benyon. Set it up. Ryan Champion, you're any of the business?
Well, I've already really given my any of the business.
Are you done? Are you done? Have you got yours off your chest?
No, I did have a couple of other small bits. Like I say, mine was very much linked to homologation and an R4 and R5. But firstly, I just wanted to say bad luck to Chris Ingram at the weekend, because obviously he seemed to break his suspension before he even started the rally, which obviously that's heartbreak when you go through the whole recce. And that's what people don't see. You know, when you go to a rally, you spend like probably 4 days by that point in the Czech Republic, and he'll have had at least a 2 day recce. You get all hit up for the start of the rally, and then something happens before you even you know, start the first stage, and that's about as bad as it gets. So certainly bad luck to Chris, but they did get the car fixed, and he did get out again. And then just another one that I picked up on earlier. Some of our regular listeners will know that that Pro Driver heavily involved in the Chinese Championship with the Golf. They build the works Chinese VW Golfs, and they've just built yet another brand new car to go up to China. So although we don't see much of Pro Drive in the world of rallying anymore, they're still very active with the Volkswagen program out there. And interestingly enough, this week was 24 years since the Impreza made its world rally debut.
There you go.
Obviously.
It was interesting, China. I was speaking to Niall McShay last week, of which I can't really discuss, but I will get him on the program soon because he's a very, very interesting character. But he's also somebody who's been out in China. But still, there you go. We digress, boys. That is the end of this section. And we know Ryan Champion's going off to do something really, really exciting, and Jack Benyon's going off to play football.
I'm not going to play football.
Not playing football tomorrow. Okay, thought you might
play football on Tuesday, Tony. Come on.
Sorry, mate. I haven't got your diary in front of me.
Don't tell people this, because people will be turning up at my football to watch me play because they're that excited to see Jack Benyon play football.
Right. You're off to do something exciting.
Yeah, you sort of picked the tumbleweed up and threw it out of the way there, didn't you? Before,
I did, yeah.
I'm heading down to Walter's Arena. So tomorrow we're doing the final shakedown of the Total Porsche Safari cars. So they're all been shipped out in about 10 days' time. So there's four of the six cars been having their shakedown tomorrow. As you'd expect, before they're shipped off to Africa for an 8-day safari rally, the cars are like brand new. So shaken down. Whatever comes loose, tighten it back up again, have another go, and then they'll be checked in the workshop and sent to Africa.
Happy days. There you go. Well, have fun on your test, Jack Benyon. Have fun whatever you're up to this evening. Same time, same place next week, boys.
Absolutely.
Hey, yeah.
You said it at the same time last week. It sounded really good. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with Martin Holmes.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, the final section, and it's an honour and a privilege to welcome back Martin Holmes. Welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hi.
Now, we spoke quite a bit last week about M Sport and what they did, you know, that weekend, and you and I have spoke, you know, kind of off air also before we started doing this, and you brought up some really, really great points that perhaps were missed by us, and even by Rich in some ways. Of course, you know, it was in the eye of the storm, as it were. What it was, a clean sweep weekend for them, wasn't it?
Well, I can't ever remember anything like this happening in the World Championship ever. The British company that prepared the cars won WRC. They won WRC2, won WRC3, and of course, by regulation, meant that they also won the WRC Junior. Now, what a wonderful thing! Now, Rich obviously couldn't come booming into your program presenting a sales patch for M Sport. So maybe I can just put things as I see it. And I think it's a shame that the British media didn't really take any of that on board.
Do you think that's an indictment of the sport as a whole, or of where it's seen? If we're in it, we kind of realise how big it is and how things are going, and now we've got more teams and things like that. Do you think the damage is almost being done, you know, many years ago when we disappeared down to the two manufacturers and we lost a frontline British driver?
Well, I think it's something to do with what people have been led to perceive are the important issues in the sport. Judging by the leading article in this week's Motorsport Monday, you might get the impression the most important thing in the sport is the future of Mr. Meek. Well, I don't actually think it is. I think we've got far better things to be talking about, for example, everything to do with M Sport this week. And there are other things on other weeks which I think get overlooked by the media.
Do you think, though, there is something, I suppose, about, rightly or wrongly, at this time of year where we do get to that point where people do like to start speculating about where drivers are going to end up? Of course, there is always that domino effect. So do you think that's perhaps where it comes from, almost generating an interest? It's almost like transfer deadline day these days. As much as I hate to use a football analogy, Sky make a whole programme out of it. Is it a bit similar to that?
I think it's exactly the same. And I think that in Britain rallying, it isn't important. In Formula One, of course, for financial, if for no other reason, it is very important. For football, goodness knows, of course it is. But in rallying, we don't have to follow the rest of the world. Rallying is, of course, a unique sport, offering things that other sports don't offer. And sometimes we think, oh, that can't be. We can't be as important as that. We must better do things the way that other people do it, which is unfortunate.
It almost feels like a little bit of a sideline. You know, just going back to as you say, what M Sport kind of achieved that weekend. And you think about the coverage that Formula One goes through as well, and how the teams are presented there. Obviously, a lot of them are UK-based. It does feel like a little bit like the mainstream news and the mainstream media, aside from what's going on in motorsport media, because motorsport media is a given, isn't it? You know, perhaps we're a little bit let down in this particular tale, this particular story of the success that they had. It's perhaps mainstream media that have kind of dropped the ball a little bit.
Well, rallying, I think, doesn't promote itself in the way that it should or as effectively as it should. So insofar as the mainstream media is concerned, I have to turn to the specialist media to see what the specialist media are talking about. And the specialist media are talking all the time about Chris Meek's future. Phew! the whole thing stalls, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it does. I suppose it does. I hasten to add, but have you got any thoughts on Chris Meek's future?
No.
Okay. There you go.
Nothing.
There you go.
Hey, no. Just wish him well, and to say that for me, his glory years were with IRC, and I was really glad to be with him and talk to him and see him at the height of his career.
There you go. Absolutely. One other thing that has come about, obviously, is calendars. Recently, there was the cancellation or the dropping of Poland last week. The rest of the calendar is yet to be ratified. Obviously, it will start. 2018 will start as 2017 started. But your thoughts with regard to the dropping of Poland and perhaps a replacement event?
Well, that's a question of 13 or 14, isn't it? And certainly, the whole lack of direction when it comes to calendar selection is a worrying factor. We've got this, well, I think I've probably spoken to this before, but we had this three-way battle between FIA and policies dictated by the president. We got the Rallies Commission, and we got the WRC promoter, all got different agendas that are trying to promote. They try to work hand in hand, subject to any directions that come out of the president of the FIA. But what's happening about long hauls? We have New Zealand issuing statements that the reason they are out of the frame for this, or next year at least, is financial, how that they don't want to have anything like as much coverage in long-haul rallying as would be nice, simply for economic reasons, which is understandable. I personally think the reason that we don't want to have so many long-haul runners is because the quality of the events are not up to what the World Championship requires. We've got Argentina, we've got Mexico, and we've got Australia, of which we're all very happy. But with the exception of New Zealand, how on earth can anybody else jump to that level? It's just something completely impossible. Now, on that account, that sidelines, their argument itself sidelines the opportunities for bringing New Zealand back again, which I think is a pity, because New Zealand have had a big rethink and they have recognised the limitations and have addressed what their limitations are. They've got a what I presume will be a candidate rally 1 week after Rally Australia. Whether, of course, that's going to happen as a candidate rally or not, I don't know. But I'd like to think that the FIA would take the opportunity, while in that part of the world, to go across the Tasman after Coffs Harbour Rally and see what is now going on in New Zealand. I've got a lot of friends and connections with New Zealand, and I don't want to see them disappearing, and I think for the World Championship, it ought not to disappear either. But that concerns the New Zealand, which is just my particular rant. When it comes to other long-haul rallies, I mean, these numbers being quoted as rallies banging on the door, they're rubbish.
With regards to, obviously, you know, I think everybody's got fond thoughts about New Zealand, and, you know, obviously Hayden Paddon's been trying to get something going and getting people support, and he's very passionate about it. I think it was always kind of a given that it would, I think, I'm trying to think whether it would be 10 or 15 years ago, whether it were rotation was a possibility between Australia and New Zealand, but that didn't work for either party, did it?
Well, that wasn't any fault of New Zealand. That was political power from Australia. I mean, New Zealand suffers from this all the time, being overshadowed by the influence of Australia. It happened again here.
I can understand from a completely and utterly non-rally fan, whatever point of view, people are keen to get manufacturers into countries that they want to go to, that they feel they want their brands to go to. Is this where it gets really, really conflicted, that there's a need to go to these countries, but the infrastructure clearly isn't there?
Well, it's a question of why they actually want to be in the championship in the first place. Do they want to be in the championship because the championship is strong and on its own account speaks for itself, or simply as a commercial venture? I mean, I don't know whether I've explained this before, but long-haul rallies don't deliver the strength to the World Championship that the World Championship needs. The high probability of a long-haul rally disappearing in a few years from the championship is extremely high. The chance of a classic European championship rally disappearing at short notice is very small. So why are we still banging on about long hauls? That's what I'm trying to say.
But I think the thing is that the manufacturers, you know, I think I read your piece with Michelle Nandan, which was in Rally Sports, I think, and a couple of other publications with regards to their need to go to certain parts for the high-end eye brand.
In what way?
Well, they want to be, that, you know, there are strong markets for them. Obviously, China didn't quite happen, but they were one of the manufacturers, I think, that wanted to go there. You know, I guess it's return on investment for them, you know, whether it's the fact that they can allocate budget from the importer in China that will pay for some of the WRC program. I don't know. I don't understand the mathematics of perhaps how they allocate funding for the WRC programs. But maybe that is where it starts to come in, where each country has to put, you know, the dealers have to put an amount of money in into the WRC program, and maybe it comes down to, you know, the economics of it.
Every single manufacturer has their own particular reason reasons why they want to be in the World Championship, or why they want to leave, or for how long they want to be there. And it's a story by itself to explain the 101 different reasons why. Now, with Hyundai, which, although they've been around for quite a long time now in the World Championship, they haven't been here with such a, in such a presence before. And obviously, they are still working out ways in which their management, even the uncertain aspects of their management, can be won over. And certainly, when it comes to involvement nationally with importers, that is a very telling way to persuade management that the championship is the place to be.
If it's not the place to be, though, for the World Championship, and going back to the point, obviously, you made with regards to, you know, and I completely and utterly understand the infrastructure and the logistics of events and things like that, that obviously a European event is less likely to pull on the championship. So, you know, why are we trying to, you know, using China as an example? Obviously, it was flaky to begin with, and obviously, it didn't come to the fore in the end anyway. And obviously, a good European event will be there and will stand, in inverted commas, on its own two feet. Does that not push us in the realms of having a very, very strong European Rally Championship as opposed to a World Rally Championship further down the line?
Well, it pushes us in the direction of having a very strong championship.
Right. Just not entirely sure what the title of the championship will be.
Well, the World Championship, but the main thing is that the strength of it is in Europe.
Yeah. It's always been, though, that, you know, the WRC has always been... The strength of it has been in Europe, probably because of all the teams are based in Europe. Obviously, the majority of the calendar's made up there. Does it not add something to the fact that, you know, the flavour of the championship going to Mexico, going to Argentina, going to Australia, possibly going to New Zealand again?
Well, the worthy causes from the long haul factor have worked their way through the championship to be established.
Yeah. So your concerns is perhaps a new one trying to come in and not quite living up, as you put it before. You know, the bar is incredibly high from all those events and you know, previously from New Zealand. You know, the likelihood of a long haul event coming up to that particular level now is possibly, you know, dare I say, doing something in the wind, as it were.
Of course.
Peeing in the wind. Is that where we're going with this?
In the wind, yes.
Yeah.
Wind.
Yeah. Okay. Now I do completely understand that. But what I do hope is that we do still have those long haul events. And I think,
well, you've got to call them straight away with the possibility of a fourth one that earn their place in the championship.
Yeah, and they're there on merit. If they were in Europe, they'd be in the calendar anyway. I think am I kind of reading between the lines there a little bit? But
yeah.
If they'd be there on merit as opposed to having to be there due to needs of the manufacturers, as it were, and logistics of calling it a long haul event.
Or politics, yes.
Yeah. Okay. No, I get that. I guess you know, moving forward is the fact of the way the WRC is now perceived from the outside, has that affected, you know, the strength of other FIA championships? You know, we've mentioned ERC before, of course. Has that been affected? You know, are people now seeing, you know, WRC as more of a, you know, missing the rung almost? And I say that hesitantly. And the reason why I say it hesitantly is when I look at the number of R5 cars that were registered for ERC on Barham last weekend.
So, not sure what you were asking.
Well, what I mean is the ERC still seen as a career driver's path, or have we got a situation now where career drivers are going straight to WRC, whether it be in the DMAC Juniors or whether it be WRC 2, and ERC now is perhaps, it fulfills a need of... okay, there will be some career drivers there, but certainly affluent drivers, semi-professional drivers, dare I say, that want to do a proper championship with a proper FIA title. So is that what that's now fulfilling?
Yes, and of course it's fueled by the FIA's policy of trying to have stepladders and having stepping stones up the sport. You know, they would ideally like to have R5 and R4 and R2 and R1 as the stepping stones into the success in the sport. And it's going in that direction, and I think quite well. What you do have, of course, is the way that the European Championship and the regional championships are largely dominated by all the cars in the World Championship, except, of course, the World Rally cars. So you do get spillover from the World Championship into the regionals. But basically, FIA is planning for the World Championship in its different levels to be the domination of the sport.
Is that obviously not the natural thing? Obviously, it is the World Rally Championship. It is the pinnacle of the sport. Is that the aspirational point for people to get to, isn't it?
Yes, well, people, you say. There's more than one person in the sport. There's more than one reason why people are in the sport. I mean, just in the same way that BTRDA people are quite... I presume they're satisfied with the way that the sport is offering them opportunities. They're not the people that are the professional people that want to progress further up the ladder. They're people that whose requirements, sporting requirements, are provided for.
It scratches an itch.
Yeah,
pretty much. I think that's obviously the way of putting it. But I still find it staggering. I mentioned this to Ryan last week, and you know, Ryan obviously he's gone through finding budget probably to 10 times the level I've had to find budget over the years. But I still find it amazing that people are finding money to run, you know, that number of R5 cars on an ERC round. I am fascinated to know, despite all the things that. You know, we've made our concerns, as you and I have just been talking, with regards to mainstream media not quite jumping on the bandwagon of rallying, kind of coming back through this kind of meteoric rise with R5 and with the new WRC cars especially. I don't understand where the finance is coming from. I really don't.
I think that the sport is just growing and growing and growing. And it's... You see it all the time. I was surprised that I saw Latvia Championship. People had test days for a Latvian Championship event. Grief! I mean, when we were involved in the World Championship in different levels ourselves, there was no such thing as testing. I mean,
first stage, well, first stage.
When you see the sales of easy apps all over the sport, I mean, the whole thing is in a different place. What it used to be.
And while I suppose that had to happen, one thing that has happened, which I find quite unique in some ways, and I don't know whether this is just the fact of the saturation of media of other sports and things like that, but obviously you're involved in the media side of it, and you've been involved in the competition side of it. It's kind of while the sport has got bigger and the money that being spent has got bigger, the coverage has actually got almost, dare I say, smaller.
Well, that's due to the effect of not being promoted on the understanding that the sport, of course, is now one of far more available sports now than they ever used to be. I mean, when Monte Carlo started in 1911, what other international activity in the sporting world was there? I mean, the world is changing.
So I realise I'm probably going to contradict myself with this one, Martin, but, you know, there was some concerns from within. And when I say within Rally, that, you know, Rallycross would perhaps take fans and, you know, because it was a far easier and far more accessible version of rallying, even though it's nothing like rallying. I think the fact that like Petter had gone there and obviously Sebastian Loeb's gone there, of course we've got Alistair McRae there on the next round as well. We were concerned that was going to happen, but while World Rallycross has been going on in their little thing over in the corner, WRC has come back huge. So I'm confused about where we're losing fans or perhaps where we're not gaining them anymore.
Well, when you have a look at the attendance figures on the rallies, particularly last week's Bahrain rally, I mean, they're staggering. I mean, I went to the Bahrain rally 50 years ago. And there was no such thing as a traffic jam. I mean, things are changing all the time.
It's, I think, you know, again, I want us to get stronger and I want us to get bigger. You know, I feel like I get almost battered by stuff from World Rallycross, which is great, because even though, I'll be honest with you, I don't follow World Rallycross as much as what I used to when I was working covering British Rallycross a few years ago, I still kind of know what's going on without even watching it. But I still feel like it's almost like a dark secret sometimes, WRC. And I know quite a lot of people and I can normally find out what's going on, but I feel like I have to seek it out a little bit more.
I think that Rallycross in general is a distraction. It's meant to be a new version of rallying. And of course it's not. It's the new version of racing. And the people that become interested in Rallycross, I think, are essentially people who wanted an alternative to the opportunities presented to them by racing. Now, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I've still never really met anybody other than media that think that Rallycross is some type of challenge to rallying. I don't think it is at all.
No. I've spoke to several people in Rallycross about this, and I think I've even had people on this program, is that Rallycrosses and rallying's kind of own undoing to some degree when people try and compare them, is the fact that there's just the name rally in the world rally, in the word Rallycross. I think it wouldn't even be a conversation piece if it didn't have the word rally in Rallycross. I think if it was called something completely different, then
kind of
it
based on the cars, which are similar to the cars used in rallying, yeah.
I think that's come full circle again now. Obviously, that's where, you know, a lot of the Group B stuff went back in the day, and you'd know better than me about this, but I think only recently, I think the Polos that Petter Solberg's using are 2016 World Rally cars that have been converted, but the rest of the cars in the paddock have been built, you know, specifically for rallycross as opposed to being a rally car hybrid that's been adapted. So, yeah.
And then, of course, we get confused with rallycross, whether the effect of the global rallycross series and everything else, that, which has their own cars. And
yeah.
Not straightforward.
No, not at all. And I always find it fact that it's called global and it doesn't actually go anywhere really outside of the States, but it's a big claim to make, but still, there you go, different conversation for a different day. Martin, we had you on probably 3 or 4 months ago. We tried not to make predictions 3 or 4 months ago. I was hesitant and I teased Jack Benyon last week, and I also teased Rich Milner a little bit with regards to, you know, if we would have all had a few pennies on M Sport perhaps becoming the manufacturers world champions and an M-Sport driver, obviously Sebastien Ogier becoming the driver's champion, what odds you would have got on that at the beginning of the year?
Well, I wouldn't have put any odds on anybody, because you never know how things are going to go. I mean, one of the things which we never knew at the beginning of the year was how the new generation cars would perform, whether they would be reliable, whether some would have, like happened in the old Group B days, a catastrophe of a design, and some have a perfect level of design. But we ended up with four cars which basically should be, and in a lot of instances are, very comparable in performance, which is very nice to see. But we had no idea that that would be the case. Obviously, the other things which everybody's predicting about is everything to do with drivers. And, of course, we never know how drivers are going to perform. I mean, when we think about Neuville, we never thought that he would start the season as in a catastrophe in the way that he did. But it happened, and that was some of the attraction. When we're talking about future predictions, going off a little bit in a different direction, but, I mean, we come back to these support championships and what support championships actually mean. And when you look at the drivers who won the titles in the past in the support championships, who are now in the world championship itself, it's very interesting to see how important it is to follow how these support championships are working. when we look at things like the Junior Championship that made Sordo the guy who earned his place in the championship. When we look at the Junior, that's what produced Ogier. When we look at Academy, that's what produced Prig. When we look at Academy, that's what produced Elvin. Going back to Junior, Lefebvre, and then going to WRC2, that's what produced Lappy. So when we talked earlier about M Sport not getting the success being recognised, nor do the championships that M Sport was successful in, that's my little theory anyway.
No, I think it is interesting, and I think there's drivers that have gone through the process, and it is almost forgotten. And I think, I'm a big supporter of the junior category, and I think, you know, we had John Armstrong on last week, and, you know, I've known John since pretty much he first started, you know, competing properly, and I've banged on about him so much, but he has kind of climbed, as you know, he's climbed through that ladder of, he started off in the Fiesta ST, went to the R2T, and won his rights to do, you know, two events in an R5 car, and you know, to see him come through and put in a faster stage time in WRC2 when we all know how competitive it is, and you know, the tyre war is on, and you know, most people would talk about the Michelin tyre being the tyre to be on, but for him to go and do it in a car, you know, he'd only done one testing, and then obviously he was learning his way through, perhaps not on the preferred tyre of some people on tarmac. I think it was phenomenal. But again, there's another driver that's come through the junior section. And I just hope that these guys that are really putting it out there in the junior sections are going to get picked up, and, you know, people are going to start recognising them for what they are, I suppose, over budget.
Fair to say, yes.
You know, I keep everything crossed for these guys whenever I see them, you know, the likes of him and the Oshan and people like that. And just be interested, just before we finish, this thing that Hyundai are doing with regards to this kind of driver shootout. What do you make of driver shootouts, Martin?
It's difficult to know, really. I feel far more the effect of actually winning championships is much more, which is a small championship or a big championship, is much more telling than shootouts. Shootouts are an opportunity to give people the chance that they wouldn't otherwise have, rather than actually giving them the opportunity to succeed that they wouldn't otherwise have. It's good to see new people coming through, and good to give new people an opportunity to show their talents and their opportunities, and of course also to show their weakness.
I think it'll be interesting to see. I think they're down to the last seven now, I think it is. And one of those is a driver I think we spoke about not maybe last time or maybe the time before, which is Kalle Rovanperä. What do you make of this young man's continuing rise? Spoke about rather favourably by Malcolm Wilson, who witnessed him do a test in one of his cars up at Greystoke. Looks like he could be in an M Sport car for Wales Rally GB. Is this, you know, we talk about academies and things like that. This guy seems to be bypassing all these things and making his name very much straight away in an R5 car.
Good, isn't it? Amazing. Could have happened in my day.
No, I think I'm
sweating the exams in those days.
Yeah, I know. I find it stack, you know, going back to all the videos from when he was 7, 8 years old and things like that, and you just think, okay, you know, he's the son of, and I understand where it's going, but you know, I've heard only good things, and not just in the media, from other people as well, that have witnessed some of the things he's done, and I just don't know. There's an excitement, and this is, I guess this is the other thing as well. We have to find homes for all these drivers. We have to find homes in the World Championship for all these drivers.
So long as they want to be there. I mean, when you succeed at that age, how many times do you actually keep that passion 20 years later? I don't know. We'll see.
It'll be an interesting one. Martin, thank you so much for joining us this week, as ever.
Well,
it's always good to talk. Folks, you know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter and Facebook.com/Absolute Rally. You can email us via the website, which is absoluterally.co.uk. Let us know your thoughts, what we've been discussing. But Martin, you will come back and talk to us again before the end of the season.
That's if you ask me.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And thanks to Martin Holmes for joining us as ever. Always a unique view on things. Now, one championship we have kind of followed all year. Obviously, we had Eric Nielsen on as the one of the guys behind the American Rally Association Championship only last week, talking about how the championship could be rounded up and our unique piece that we did with both Robbie Durant and Travis Pastrana. First time we'd had driver and co-driver on the same time. Maybe that's the future for people. It's the first time we've done it. And congratulations to them for securing the very first, the American Rally Association Championship. Obviously, just pipping David Higgins and Craig Drew, the Subaru teammates. It wasn't all their own way. It was very up and down. There's been some unique tales to tell throughout the championship, obviously, which we alluded to last week, obviously with different co-drivers and things like that. And yeah, Robbie went through a fair few training sessions and a few bits and pieces with different people to get himself fit to enable to sit in the car for last weekend. And yeah, as I say, it was just a fantastic performance from Travis and from David. And yeah, I'm sure it's exactly what the championship wanted, to have two drivers going head to head. They've tried to do several things this year. They've tried to limit tyres, they've tried to limit restrictors and things like that in order to try and balance out things for the championship. And I know they're trying to do a lot more things, and very, very excited with the possibilities of some R5 cars going over there for next year. Obviously, the calendar has also been decided now. No shared events as it was this year with Canada. They've got their first event, which is now a little bit later as well in the season. It's starting in April, which is quite late in the season for over there. But they're starting with Oregon Trail over on April the 20th. Which is, again, it's one of those events that's been around, that, you know, various guises, the championship for many, many years. And then the Olympus Rally is back as well. But please, I can't push this enough, because they're one of the few championships that have really embraced this kind of technology thing. And it's very, very, it's probably shiny as the WRC app and things like that, but it's very functional. It works, and it takes you through to links and stuff on the Facebook page. And they had the guys there doing some stage ends and things like that. Really, you know, all hands on deck to try and get as much PR out from these rounds as possible. And it's been great to watch, and really, really take my hat off really to the guys behind the championship. Obviously, first year, they really didn't know what they were going to get. Next year, they've got the junior section coming, of course, which is involving DMAC, and there's already cars in build and things like that. So things are looking good stateside, and hearing various rumours about possibilities of some more overseas drivers going over there to do the championship, and also maybe one or two old favourites, and I'll let you figure out who that is. But hopefully, fingers crossed, as I say, it's proven to be a strong championship for them this year, and it can be even stronger now for 2018. But our congratulations go to Travis Pastrana and to Robbie Durant, and hopefully we'll try and do what we did last time, maybe with the guys, maybe get to try and get the two of them on again and have a catch up. As I say, it wasn't that long ago we had Robbie on, but we'll see what we can work out anyway, certainly in season 10 of the podcast, when we've got a bit more time, when things start to quieten down towards the end of the season. But well done to you guys. I know Robbie listens from time to time as well. Not too sure about Travis. Hopefully he will. Maybe we'll convert him. But there you go. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed the podcast this week. It's always a busy one. We're always trying to fit things in and try and do things, and I'm sure there's bits and pieces sometimes that we do miss out. If you've got something that you're involved in, whether it's a championship, regional championship, whatever it may be, we're always looking to talk to people. And as I say, we've had Eric Nielsen on from the American Rally Association only the other week. You know, if you're involved in something like that, please do drop us a line. You know how to find us anyway. It's facebook.com/absoluterally, of course, or you can find us on Twitter, which is Absolute_Rally, or by all means use the website. Obviously all the old episodes there are now, so yeah, you can find how to find us on there anyway. But we do appreciate the downloads, and as I say, we are always looking for different things. By the way, if you do listen to us and you download the podcast via iTunes, believe it or not, the reviews do make a difference and subscriptions make a difference. So if you could subscribe, that would be great, because it does help us when we sit down and we start talking to people like Pace Notes, who, of course, without them, we wouldn't be here. So if you could hit the subscribe button, that really does help, and keep spreading the love and spreading the word. Folks, we will be back same time, same place next week in your little podcast hole.